So thank you for the invitation. I'll be using transparencies, and you want to, okay, now everybody is in the dark, right? All right. Yeah. So the work that I want to describe is joint with Bruce Jordan and partly with Yaakov Rashavsky, and it is about arithmetic application of the bed reduction of Shimura curves mainly, but a little bit about higher dimensional things too. So let me remind you that the first case where the bed reduction was looked at was the classical case of the modular curve, let's say x naught of p, the bed reduction over the field with p elements is two copies of the J line. And in fact, the same picture holds if we add level structure outside of p. So we take some level structure k, which is consisting of a level structure outside of p, k upper p, and the Iwahori ip at p, and we get two copies of the curve with level structure only k upper p over fp. This is good reduction, but then they're glued together in a certain way. So, I mean, one knows here really the global structure of the bed reduction, and there's a lot of applications to that. The second case, when people really started studying the bed reduction, was in fact for Shimura curves. So these are associated to a quaternion division algebra over Q, and then if B is the quaternion algebra, it can be over Q or it can be over a totally real field F. But if it is over a totally field F, then what we want is we want exactly one infinite prime to be split, and all the other infinite primes have to be ramified, in the sense that the quaternion algebra at one infinite prime is isomorphic to the 2x2 matrices, and in all other primes at infinity is isomorphic in fact to the Hamilton quaternions. And so under this assumption, one can associate to the quaternion algebra a curve, the Shimura curve, and this curve, the reflex field is the field F, so it's defined over F. And now Cherednik had considered the case of a totally real field, but he got a slightly imprecise result, and Drinfeld had gotten a precise result, but he considered only the case over Q. Today the precise result about the description can be obtained by Cherednik's method. This was done by Warshawski, or by Drinfeld's method, plus the usual game that one plays with Shimura curve, which is that one has to add, they did not represent a moduli problem, so one has to add some auxiliary choice of a quadratic CM extension of the totally real field. So in this way, this was handled by Rappaport and Fink. And so, sorry, no? Okay, so anyway, Warshawski did, Riemann and Fink, I'm sorry, thank you. So Riemann and Fink did it from the moduli point of view, and Warshawski did this from the Cherednik group theoretic point of view. In either case, one gets a certain picture, which is that if I make the assumption that the level at P is maximal compact, so I am assuming that I have an order which is maximal at P, and I look at its periodic units, and I assume that the group K has the form K upper P, K prime lower P, and I'm assuming that K prime P is P maximal, then there is a bed reduction that looks like a large number of curves of genus zero. They're not quite P1, they're not quite P1s, they're twisted forms of P1s, the quadratic twists of P1s, and they are sort of intersecting each other transversely in a complicated pattern, which, however, is very well understood, and which can be completely described. And I will do this very soon. So this is the second type of bed reduction that has been understood completely. And it has been completely understood because of the machine of p-adic uniformization. So in this p-adic uniformization business, one gets a very, very good description of the situation, both local and global. The local picture is very simple. Like the previous case, it is of normal crossings, but one can say more. So what is happening? What is happening? So there is some very interesting formal scheme that had been first constructed by Mumford in greater generality, not just over p-adic fields, but over rather general normal local domains. Formal scheme of Mumford, I'm using a Greenfield notation for it here. If you look at the underlying rigid analytic space, which is in Renault sense it's generic fiber, then the points of this is the projective line over CP. So here what is happening is that I've taken the totally field F, I've completed it at some prime P, which is where we are going to compute the reduction. And now CP is sort of informal notation here. What I mean is that I look at the algebraic closure of FP and I look at its completion. So this is kind of what I'm doing. But in fact, this thing does not depend on the local field and optoisomorphism. And so I call it, the usual name is CP. And one removes from CP the closed set of all the FP rational points, and this set now as a set, it's the points of the rigid analytic space. There is a standard structure of a rigid analytic space on it. There's a standard structure of an underlying formal scheme, and the skeleton of this is the Q plus one regular tree. Q is the number of elements, which I denote here by the absolute value of P. This is the number of elements in the residue field, and so one gets the usual maybe Buratit tree, the tree of SL2, Sir calls it, the usual tree of homothetic classes of lattices in the vector field of dimension 2 over F. So this is a formal scheme which is independent of the global picture. It is entirely local. What one does is a trick which has been first discovered by Cherednik, and this is the technique of interchanging local invariants. And what it does is the following. It just picks a completely different quaternion algebra, B interchanged. It's over the same field F, and its discriminant is obtained as follows. P was a prime dividing the discriminant of the algebra B, and we remove it from the discriminant, but since the discriminant of a quaternion algebra has to have an even number of primes, just dividing the discriminant of B by P cannot lead to a discriminant of a legitimate quaternion algebra. And what we do is we add the last infinite prime, the one at which the algebra was split. So at this point, we get an algebra which is totally definite at infinity, and no geometric object is associated to it in the usual Shimura sense. But what we do now is we look at a subgroup of it, gamma, which is obtained in the following way. You look at the level outside of P, and now you add you invert the prime P at this situation, and you get subgroup gamma, which is not arithmetic, it is S-arithmetic, where S is the set of the unique prime P, so it has denominator, the elements in it have denominators at P, and this group is another group which which has nothing to do a priori, let's say, with the congruence subgroup by which we've been dividing to get the curve above. But now what we do is we have the following theorem, which is then due to Cherevnik, Drinfeld, Ryman Singh, Warshawski, and the theorem says that the Shimura curve, when we look at this over the field FP, is in fact completely explicitly described by a twisted p-adic uniformization. So what is happening is the following thing. One begins by looking at gamma prime, which is the element of this S-arithmetic, this p-arithmetic group, and looking at the elements whose determinant has, well, or maybe I should say the norm, I mean, because we are in a quotidian algebra, so the technical term is for the determinant is the reduced norm. So we look at elements whose p-adic valuation of the determinant here makes sense because at p, this is a split, so we can choose an embedding of it in GL2QP, but I mean, let's say the reduced norm or the determinant has a zero p-adic valuation. So we look at this gamma prime, and now we projectivize it in the sense that we divide by its center. It contains the well, I guess I really should look at it times the center divided by the center, or it divided by the intersection of it with the center, and then one look at this Drinfeld or Mumford scheme, and we divide this by the action of this group. So it acts on it. I mean, the action is completely evident on the points of the rigid space. It is completely clear what the action is. It's by a Möbius transformation, and in an obvious sense, I have not made any definitions, so there's nothing I want to add to this. So now this is a completely reasonable object to take, but now you extend scalars over FP to the quadratic unramified extension of FP. So this in itself, I should say, is already a compact rigid space, which is in fact canonically the rigid space associated to some algebraic curve over FP. And what we do is we extend the scalars of this algebraic curve from FP to FP square, and now what we do is we divide it by a group of order 2, C, cyclic group of order 2, and the group of order 2 is really gamma divided by gamma prime times the center. Now, the group acts on this because, I mean, the group that really acts on omega 2 is PGL2 of FP. I mean, this is the group of Möbius transformation. So, in fact, the whole group gamma, or its quotient by the center, acts here. So we can certainly continue to make C act. And the action of C on FP2, on the quadratic and ramified extension, is via powers of the Frobenius. And these powers are determined by the valuation of the determinant. So sometimes the action is completely trivial, and sometimes the action is via the Frobenius. And this is why I said that it's a quadratic Frobenius twist. It could be not a twist at all. It could just be taking this thing and dividing it by the cyclic group, which in this case is something like an Atkin-Lehner involution acting on this curve, and then just extending scalars to the quadratic field extension. Or it could be that we are seriously twisting by the Frobenius action. So the action here is via the Frobenius element, and via here as the Atkin-Lehner involution, and then we are seriously making this twist. Okay, so this is the description of the situation, and I should say that in fact one can do a lot better, as was first noticed by Drinfeld. Namely, one can construct coverings of this symmetric space of this Mumford scheme. So Drinfeld has constructed coverings of this, and these coverings are not really understood very well on the level of formal schemes, except for a tiny, tiny bit of an effort which was made by Jeremy Teitelbaum, but I mean, really, they are not at all understood as formal schemes. They're rigid spaces. And when you use them, then it is not necessary to assume that the group we are dealing with is maximal compact at P. It could be general, but we are not going to use them at all. We are really going to stay only with these schemes, exactly because the description is so simple. Now, what do we get in such a situation? So in such a situation, there is a tree of which I have already mentioned, some sort of a regular tree. And what you do to describe the configuration, the complicated configuration that was shown just vaguely before, what you do is you look at this tree and you divide it out by the the group gamma, and the complicated configuration of these P1s, or not P1s, curves of genus 0 that are crossing each other, is really obtained by looking at the tree and dividing it by the group gamma. One gets this way a finite simplicial complex, in fact of dimension 1, a finite graph. And this finite graph is the dual graph of this configuration. To every component, we have to give a point. Anytime the two components cross, we have to draw an edge between them. And once we do that, we get a formal scheme, which is, in fact, we put these configurations, we get a special fiber of the formal scheme. So I've not taken into account the Frobenius Atkin-Lehner twist, but this is really all right. So now, what do we want to do with this? What we want to do with this is we want to ask the following question. When we look at this VB of KP, now no longer over FP, but really, oops, this I don't really need anymore. So when we look at the curve VB, and we are asking what are its points over FP, or over extension of FP, we want to use this description to give the points. All right, so what do we do? So here's the result. So we take some finite field extension over FP, and just to simplify notation, I denote the Shimura curve now by X, and I make also the assumption that P, well, what is P? P is a uniformizer of the local field. It's a kind of, unfortunate. I should have put like omega P or pi P or something, but the pi of P is the usual notation, but just I'm assuming that this P is in gamma, and I'm asking whether there are points. And what turns out is quite interesting. What turns out is that in general, one does not expect points, but points are a torsion phenomena. Namely, if the group gamma contains a very specific type of torsion element, including, by the way, the trivial torsion element in some cases, then this is the condition for existence of local points. So what is the theorem? Here it is. So the theorem says the following. I guess why is K prime not defined? K prime is not defined, huh? Quite interesting. All right, I'll have to define it. I mean, I can manage that. Maybe it was written in the previous page. I'm just very surprised that it's not defined, but okay, I'll just define it. All right, so I just need the colored things, and I'll define it. All right, so so I have to say what K prime is. So I'm assuming that P is in the in the group. So this is going to make my life slightly easier. So K plus is going to be the defined by saying that if you look at the group KZ, it's the valuation, the periodic valuation of the determinant of gamma. So we look at the determinant of gamma, and this is some subgroup of FP star, and we look at the periodic valuation, and K plus times Z is exactly this group. And now the field L over FP has a ramification index E of L over FP. And now the story is the following. I should say, first of all, that K plus, in this case, is either 1 or 2. The reason being that if I have that P is in gamma, then the scalar matrix P has determinant, which is P squared, whose periodic valuation is 2. So 2 is certainly in this group. But now this group, subgroup of Z, which contains 2, is either all of Z or is just 2Z. So that this K plus is interesting. One has to go here. It's a non-negative integer. So it is greater or equal to 1. So it is either 1 or 2. And now, so it's 1 or 2. And we are looking at K plus, at the ramification index. If this is even, there are points. Now, what happens if otherwise, there are points in a very, very limited set of conditions, namely, there has to exist an element which is in gamma modulo the center minus this gamma prime modulo the center, which is of finite order. And when you have such a gamma and you look at its action on the tree, because of the fact that it is of finite order, it has a fixed point. But in fact, this fixed point cannot be a vertex because it is of odd valuation of the determinant. So it moves every vertex to a vertex of a different parity. And the only way such a thing can have a fixed point is if it reverses an edge, and in fact a unique edge. So I'm going to denote this edge by E of gamma. And so once we look at this E gamma, we are asking for there to exist a point that either the ramification index be even, or that the stabilizer in P gamma prime of E gamma has even order. So you see, it's really a question of even odd, an existence of torsion element of a very specific shape that decides what happens. Now, in general, if you make the auxiliary level small in a certain very specific sense that I don't want to specify, not just smaller than something, you have to make it smaller so that certain class groups will behave in a certain way, then the group P gamma, first of all, is torsion-free. This is the usual sense in which one talks about things that are small. But also, this K plus is actually 1. So that, in fact, there is an element in gamma whose periodic valuation is 1. And at that point, X of L is not empty if and only if the... So F of the, so this is the degree of the residue field extensions of L over FP is even. Now, why is that? This is because I want again to go back to the initial picture. Of this curve. You see, these curves are not defined over FP. They are defined over FP square because they are now a quadratic twist. And so there's no way that there'll be a point that is rational here. Such a point, where can it specialize to? You see, it cannot specialize to any place here. It cannot specialize to the points over FP because there aren't any, and it cannot specialize to the intersection ones because, well, they're not defined. So if you think about this in terms of Hensel's lemma, you see that there's no way that points can exist in such a situation. On the other hand, if if the field has been extended, if the field has been extended, then this obstruction no longer holds. I mean, you see now these curves become rational. They're FP squares. Each curve is intersected by P plus 1 or Q plus 1. I mean, Q is the number of elements in the residue field, by Q plus 1 things. So at this point, there can be no specializations, but at all the other Q square minus Q points, the points can specialize, and by Hendler's lemma, in fact, we can make a section that moves out. So this is why this intuition holds, that there's no point except if you add torsion, but so that this picture is wrong, and there's something bad happening near some intersection point or in the middle. But on the other hand, if you extend the residue field quadratically, then there are points, because you can just use Hendler's lemma to take a rational FP square point here and extend the scalar. So this is, I mean, this is the beginning of the proof. So, all right, so this is the theorem. And this is joint with Jordan and Warshawski. Right. I don't really want it at this point, but sure. I don't need it at this point anymore. All right. So, so this is a. But no, but I do want the bottom one. Yeah, I do want the bottom one. No, I have to give up. So this is joint with Jordan and Warshawski. We did with Bruce Jordan. I did in 85 the case that the field is Q and that the it was not available then in general, this picture, although it was very close to being available. So with Jordan, we did the case that the field is Q and that the level structure outside of P is maximal. And I want to say that all this story about the p-adic field is an extremely close analog of Shimura's result, which I think were also due at least in part to Steve Kudla. But Shimura's result on real points. So in fact, there is a very close analogy between the reals and the p-adic points where p divides the discriminant of the algebra, because, I mean, in some sense, if you like, you take the set of all the points that the algebra is ramified and the other one at infinity, you get an odd number of primes, and the variety has uniformization at all these primes. So in some sense, they take a very symmetrical role. And so this Shimura thing is the analogy. Okay, so now I want to make this more precise. I said that in this asymptotic picture, when you take a sufficiently small thing, then in fact there's points if and only if the residue field is even, because there's no torsion points left. But what happens if in fact the residue field extension is odd, and all these things are odd? Well, in this case, something quite surprising happens with distortion elements. So I want to define a totally global thing. I want to look at the power of 2, the maximal power of 2, such that the 2 to this power roots of unity, if you look at the totally real subfield, is contained in our totally real field F. So this TF is at least 2, because if you look at T equals 2, this is Q of square root of minus 1, and its totally real subfield is Q. So certainly it is contained in F. But of course, the next one would be Q root 2, and there's no guarantee that this be contained in F. So, I mean, it's T of F is at least 2, but it need not be 3. And now this field is completely ramified above 2, so there's a unique prime tau above 2. And now there's this result with Warshawski that, again, generalizes previous result for maximal level and for the field F equals Q, which was not understood in this conceptual way at the time. So what you do is you have to look at the degree L of FP and times K plus, and you assume that all of these are odd. So K plus is 1 and the degree is odd, and which means that the E, the residue field extension F, and the ramification degree of L of FP is odd. So then we want to know whether there's points or not, and this is a serious torsion phenomenon now. Here's the result. There's points if and only if one of two things happen. Either P, our prime P, at which we are trying to see if there's local points, actually is above tau. Being above tau means that it's above 2. It means that it's the prime of residue characteristic 2. But it's not enough. The ramification index has to be odd. And now there has to be gamma in P gamma of exact order 2 to the TF, such that the valuation of the norm is odd. You remember that we are under the assumption that P is in gamma. This assumption is not necessary for this to hold, but I mean, it kind of simplifies slightly, very slightly, the statement of this part stays the same. The next one slightly will change. The other case that there is a local points is when there's in fact two elements up to well, let's say two elements in gamma, alpha tilde and gamma tilde, whose reduction to modulo the center is called alpha and gamma, and so they have to be of order 2 modulo the center. The alpha and gamma has to be of order 2. The valuation, the periodic valuation of one of them, of alpha, is even, of the other is odd, and they have to satisfy this relation. Alpha gamma is minus, alpha tilde gamma tilde is minus gamma tilde alpha tilde, and this pins down completely the quaternion algebra, almost completely. It tells you that it is the algebra generated by standard generators, square root of minus the norm of alpha tilde minus the norm of gamma tilde. And in particular, this algebra can be ramified only at the infinite primes and at the at some primes above 2 and nowhere else. So it pins, you either pin down completely the prime as characteristic 2, very limited, and or you pin down completely the algebra, and this is the only possibility that there are local points. So this this is the result. This is the result, and this result actually had a surprising application very recently by Skorobogatov and Yefayev. What they do is they look at the level outside of P being of type gamma zero of n level, so n is now prime to the discriminant. And now they had to consider the local points both for the gamma naught of n picture and for the gamma 1 of n picture. And what they want is they wanted to give examples that there are no global points, so K is some imaginary quadratic field, and then they want to have global local points everywhere. And what they do for this is they consider the covering map from x1 to x0, they twist it by all the Galois automorphism of x1 over x0, and they want that they consider all these maps from all the twists of x1 to x0, and now this forms something which in their technical language is a covering family. So the points here are the union of all these images from here of k, let's say, and now if there's no local points. Each of these twists has some obstruction, has some place where there's no local point, but all the x-naughts have local points everywhere, then there can be no global points. So this understanding of the local points actually directly gives an understanding of the inexistence of global points. It's kind of nice. And as I said, the previous case was done, I mean, this special case was done. So this is a nice application of these ideas. They work over Q, but there's no problem to do what they do over totally real fields. So under certain conditions, one can guarantee then that this will have local points everywhere. But for every twist, let's say by sigma or by chi, so chi is a character of the Galois group of x1 over x0, for every twist there will be at some point no local points, so then no global points can exist here, but then the global points here, which are the union of all the images of the global points from all the twists, is also empty. And so you get that there's no global points, but there are local points, and everything is just because you can understand the local points of this picture. So this gives examples violating, well, I mean, the Hasse principle. And you can show that in these cases, by further analysis, I mean, the obstruction is so-called Manning obstruction, but this is taking us away from this subject. So I wanted to say, first of all, that the whole picture generalizes to higher dimensions. Thank you. I'll just put this. So what happens there? So we look at a co-compact discrete subgroup gamma of GLD of FP, and I'm again making the assumption, in order to simplify the statement, it's completely unnecessary, but the statement gets more complicated otherwise, so that the periodic valuation of the center is Z. And then here I did define K plus, so the valuation at P of the determinant of gamma is S before K plus times Z. And now, exactly the same way as before, that we knew before that K plus was 1 or 2, exactly the same reason shows that K plus now divides D, because you see, if you look at the element P, which, you take the element whose norm is 1, and then the scalar matrix, the determinant is P to the D, valuation D, so you know that D is in the group K plus Z, and so K plus divides D. And now you do exactly the same thing, so the Drinfeld is generalized Mumford schemes over, this time not over general fields, but over local fields, so you get again some big formal scheme, omega D over FP, which was constructed then by Drinfeld in this case, and was studied by people like Mustafin and by Kurihara. So this was studied by various people, and you again take gamma prime, which is the intersection with the valuation zero elements, and I mean again it is better to add to it the center then and to divide by it. It's P gamma prime, and you again do a similar situation. Now C is no longer, it's still a cyclic group, but it now can have order dividing D. And this, by the way, is it's algebraizing canonically. This algebraizes canonically to a scheme over the ring of integers of FP, and now we are taking some sort of a twist of it, which again, I mean, we are dividing by some cyclic group, which can act here in various ways, but in again, if the group is small, in a certain sense, the action here is via powers of the, well, it's always via powers of the Frobenius, but I mean all the powers of the Frobenius, the full group of automorphisms. So now this is known in all cases to be a Shimor variety. It's not true, of course, that all Shimor varieties have periodic uniformization, but on the converse is true. Every variety with a periodic uniformization is a Shimor variety, and this is a result that I think in complete generality is due to Warshawski, but was noticed in a fairly great generality by Rapoport and Sink. They begin with the complex thing and take periodic uniformization. Warshawski begins with a periodic thing and shows that you can always move up to a Shimor variety. And now there's a theorem which we prove that there's local points if and only if there is some subgroup intermediate between the center and the group, such that modulo the center it is finite. The valuation of the group is given in this way, so it has to contain dz, but because it contains the center, but it has to contain also this element, the f, the residue field, the residue field extension degree times k plus, and also the other condition is that d must divide the degree of the extension times k plus times the order of. So we have to again look at the elements of degree zero in delta tilde. We have to add back the center and divide by it, and this is this group. And so it's order like this. Now the divisibility is not by 2, but by d. And this is a necessary condition, but in fact it is sufficient in many cases. For example, if d is a prime, it is sufficient, or if d, instead of dividing this whole thing, divides the whole thing without this thing. That's in other cases. So this is it could be a sufficient condition in general. We don't know it, but this is the generalization to higher dimension of this existence of local points. At the moment, it does not have applications, but maybe it will. I mean, I will say a word about this perhaps at the end. So, well, what did they do? Right. So now I want to discuss a global application of these ideas over curves. And this global application is about the Jacobians of the Ishimura curve. So let us consider a principally polarized abelian variety over F. So F now is any global field. It will soon be again the total will fit from before. But just for a moment, F is a global field. And in such a situation, there is a Cassell's pairing that depends on the polarization. Namely, you take the Shafarevich Tate group of A over F. So I remind you that this is principal homogeneous spaces over A, which are locally trivial everywhere, but modulo those that are trivial, isomorphism types, I should say. So this form a group, the Shafarevich Tate group. This group is conjectured to be finite, always. It is not known to be finite except in very few cases, but by now there's some cases, due to the work of Carl Rubin, others, we know some examples where the Shafarevich Tate group of abelian varieties, mainly elliptic curves really, but not just, is finite. And in fact, I mean, what one knows is that Sha may have a divisible part which conjecturally is not there, and that Sha modulo the divisible part, well, I mean the p-adic, the p power torsion of it, let's say, finite for every p. So that's, and then you have the Cassell pairing that goes from Sha times Sha to Q mod Z. And in the case of elliptic curves, if A is an elliptic curve, then what one knows is that the pairing is anti-symmetric. What it means is that the pairing of any element with itself is zero in Q mod Z, and this implies, let's say, if Psi is finite, then its order is a square. Or if it is not finite, then modulo the divisible part, the order, well, I should say, well, if Psi is finite, then the order is a square. One can make formulations that are independent of this hypothesis, but I don't want to make them. So for elliptic curves, for dimension 1, this is okay, but what happens if the dimension is bigger? Well, it was thought for some time, and in fact written in the literature sometime, that the same thing holds, but in fact, this need not be true. So the first point that was not written in the literature with a proof until Flach did it, that is that the Shafarevich-Tate pairing is alternating. What this means is that xy is minus yx. But on the other hand, the condition which I mentioned just a minute before, that the class, that if you look at x times x, it need not be zero. If you know that x times x is always zero, then this follows immediately by the usual trick. On the other hand, the converse is not true because of characteristic 2 phenomena. I mean, what you get from this assumption is only that 2 times xx is zero. So xx is always of order 2. And in fact, Poonen and Stoll, who had noticed this thing, have observed that in fact there is a unique class, C, canonical class, that could be defined for this A, and this class C was of order 2 in the Shafarevich-Tate group, such that xx is xc. It does not have to be zero identically. Now, sometimes this C is zero. For certain A's, for instance, if A is an elliptic curve, C is zero, and then you get that xx is indeed zero identically. But in general, this need not be true. And in fact, correspondingly, the order of Sha is sometimes a square, and sometimes is twice a square. So in the case that A is, in the most important case, and the one that we will care about, is that A is a Jacobian. If you have a Jacobian of a smooth projective curve over the field F, then the Jacobian is canonically principally polarized by the theta divisor. And in this case, one can say exactly what is this class, this canonical class C. Namely, it is the Picard group of divisors of degree G minus 1 over C, where G is the genus of the curve. So in fact, it was shown by Lichtenbaum many years before that locally, this class, Pic G minus 1, is indeed trivial. So locally everywhere, this class is trivial. Well, I think he only considered maybe the finite a prime. So if so, then the fact that the real one is non-trivial maybe is due to Atiyah, to Patodi Atiyah or to others. But anyway, it was known for a long time that this peak G minus one is locally trivial everywhere. On the other hand, if you take twice C, so peak 2G minus 2, then this contains the canonical class of the curve C, and then this is defined over the global field. So 2C is certainly globally trivial, and therefore it is indeed of order 2 in the Shafer-Wittstedt group. So now, what the definition is that the terminology that Poonen and Stoll have put here is that if you have that this C is zero, you say that the abelian variety A is even. If on the other hand the C is non-zero, then the variety is odd. And now if the Shafer-Wittstedt group is finite, then the even case, the order is a square. And on the other hand, if it is odd, then the order is twice a square. Now it may sound weird to call something divisible by two odd, but it's really the power of two dividing the order, which is odd or even. So this is the theory that, in fact, Manin had noticed the analogous thing many years before. He noticed that if you look at the Brouwer group of a surface in characteristic P, then the Brouwer group can have an order which is two and not a square. So this is exactly the same phenomena, because one knows that the Shafer-Wittstedt group and the Brouwer group are very closely related. So this phenomena should have been noticed before, but in fact, one sees many mentions in the literature that say that that the order of the Shafer-Wittstedt group of principally involved as a Abelian variety is always a square, and this is simply not true. I should say just in passing that if the variety is not principally polarized, of course, Shafer-Wittstedt group can be basically anything. So, just put this thing here. All right. So now let us look at examples. The first example is if the field is Q, and the curve in question is this Shimura curve that we have been talking about, and now Kp is maximal compact, then in fact the Jacobian is even. This follows from the results of myself and Bruce Jordan. We have determined exactly when peak D of VB is trivial locally, and this is enough by the criterions that I haven't mentioned yet of Poonen and Stoll. On the other hand, if you divide the Shimura curve by an Atkin-Lehner involution, so you look at the quaternion algebra over Q, whose discriminant, let's say, is P times Q, you have level structure which is maximal outside of P, and you divide by the Atkin-Lehner involution WP, now this is, I should say, then in fact the Jacobian of this curve can be sometimes even and sometimes odd. I should say that this is not something which is described strictly. It is not of the kind that we have been looking at. We've been looking at cases that the level at P was maximal compact, and when you divide by the Atkin-Lehner involution, you enlarge it so that it's not compact maximal. It is in fact equal to the full local units of the maximal, well, of the algebra. This would be the maximal compact is the units of the maximal order. Now the center is there anyway, and so you just need to add an extension of degree 2 to get all the local elements. So in this case, sometimes it is even and sometimes it is odd, and so what is happening is that a completely numerical example. I know that this is something that is not done usually in these circles, but you look at P, which is congruent to 5 mod 24, and Q, which is congruent to 5 mod 12, and you assume that the quadratic residue symbol is minus 1. In this case, the Jacobian of this is odd. I should say that, so the way that you do it is you modify the analysis of the local points to cover also this case, that the level is not maximal compact, but is rather maximal. It's in some sense simpler, it's easier. I mean, I guess Og looked at this some time ago. Also, this was generalized by a student of Jordan, Srinath Baba, he looked at this in general. Maybe a remark is that if you have a curved C on which an involution is acting, rational of course, over the field S, and without fixed points, then the Jacobian of this curve must be even. Now, on this curve, a lot of actinomial involutions are acting, but unfortunately, they may have fixed points, so that this result does not apply. Now, when you do these things, when you do these two examples, when you do the first example, you get a very strange feeling when you actually go through the proof. You go through the proof is by complete classifications of the situation that was done by Jordan and myself, and you get this eerie feeling that until the last minute you're sure that you can make odd examples, odd Jacobian examples, and then everything fails, and at any time that you try to make these odd examples, you take care that the infinite prime will look one way or that the finite primes will look this way, and you go through the whole quite messy classification analysis that was done there, and in each and every step you get foiled, and you get the feeling that the game is rigged, that the Jacobians here are, in the first example, are even because, I mean, something is causing them to be even, but you don't know why. So when we saw this thing, we tried with the Atkin-Lenov involution, and then at first it seemed like it would not work, but there are odd examples. So there are odd examples, and Srinath Baba had constructed quotients by various Atkin-Lenov involutions or subgroups of Atkin-Lenov involutions, and sometimes it's even, sometimes it's odd. But there's no conceptual understanding why the Jacobians are even or odd. It looks like it's kind of a genus theory where the class group, twice the class group of a quadratic field or a general field, is some more regular structure than just the class group itself, which is quite bad and untractable. And it feels like it's a little bit like it, but I mean, we don't know why this is happening. So I want to now say a few words about a new theorem. So in our attempt to clarify this thing, which it's like this. All right, this is because 8 is a palindrome. All right, so here's the theorem. Here's a theorem that we could prove with some effort, with Jordan and Warshawski. So suppose now that you have a prime, the L, that is congruent to 1 mod 4, I want it to be, it's minus 1 mod 4. I want it to be unramified at 2. Yes, it is okay. So 1 mod 4. So I have a prime. Again, I look at Kp, which is the maximal compact. And I make some technical assumption at 2, which is that the discriminant of B is not a prime which divides 2. Then, I mean, this is a totally real field. And so the Shimura curve is no longer necessarily connected like it would have been over Q, where the class number is 1. And so you look at the components of it, and they're all isomorphic and defined over the narrow Hilbert class field F prime of F. So this is a field extension of F, which is also totally real and is of odd degree because of this assumption. The narrow class number is odd exactly because of this. And now for each of these components, what we could prove is that the Jacobian is even. And again, the game looks like it's rigged against you, and these restrictions look like we are making them only because of convenience. So I want to say a few words about this proof. So the first part of the proof is completely routine. I mean, the narrow class number, as I said, is odd. And then, because of this, all maximal orders in B are conjugate, and all the maximal OF 1 over P orders in the interchange algebra are also a conjugate. We borrowed this from some article of Chinberg and Friedman, but it looks like it is standard. At least this part of their article. Other parts of their article are more somehow new. This is an elementary part. And so this is the last transparency. in our case, in the case of the Shimua curves, the criterion that Poonen and Stoll gives for the oddness or evenness of Jacobian becomes the following, because of the way that Shimura curves are working, that they have local points. I mean, I guess the thing that enters is the fact that the existence of local points on Shimura curves only depends on parity of various quantities like K plus, the ramification index, the residue field extension. Because of the fact that all that matters is just parity, then it turns out that the Jacobian is odd if and only if two things happen. First of all, X has to have an odd genus. And second, what we have to do is we have to consider the places of F prime above those places of F which are either infinity 1 or the places in the discriminant of B. So this is a set of an odd number of places, and above them the extension is odd degree. And I guess what it really means is that the total number of places W that we are considering is also odd. So look at the set of all these places W of F prime of the narrow Hilbert class field of F, and so this is a set of odd cardinality. And now among them, ask how many have no points. For how many of them the completion of F prime at W is empty? And now you have to ask that the number of these places W at which are among this set and where there's no local points, you want this to be an odd number. And this is one condition. The other condition is that the genus is odd, and this is the necessary and sufficient condition for the Jacobian of the connected component of the Shimura curve to have an odd Jacobian. Now, the genus of the Shimura curve is not at all an innocent quantity. Over the rational numbers, when you look at the formula that Eisler, for instance, writes for it, it looks innocent enough until you notice that at some point you're looking at 1 over 6th of something, and this one, minus 1 over 6th, and this minus 1 over 6th is really the zeta function of Q evaluated at minus 1 and multiplied by 2, and exactly the same quantity occurs for a totally real field. You have to look at the zeta function of the field at minus 1, and now it is no longer so innocent, and you have to understand how this is divisible by 2, because the parity of the genus, well, if you look at 2 minus twice the genus, you have to understand this is the Euler characteristic. It tends to be 0 mod 4. Once the group has no torsion elements, it will be divisible by 4. So the understanding of the genus, the parity of the genus, is not so trivial. And so a student of Jordan had classified exactly the cases when I've made some sort of a technical assumption of the 2 does not interfere. And under this technical assumption, he has computed, in fact, when the genus is odd. This is a rather rare phenomenon. And now what we actually prove is the following. So I've said that we have to count the number of places above the discriminant of B and infinity 1 and for which there's no local points. And what one actually prove is that if you look at the number of finite such W's, is not congruent to the number of infinite such W's. So you compute this, and you compute this mod 2. And if these two answers are not the same mod 2, then according to Sadikov's classification, the genus of the curve is even. So you again lose. I mean, all the examples that you try to make in odd fail, and the result in all the cases that you can make the analysis, the answer is that the Jacobian is even. Again, it looks like the game is rigged, although, I mean, this is the usual anthropomorphic fallacy, that these are the only cases that we can analyze. I don't know if they represent the truth or not. So, last comment is that when you want to compute this quantity, this is computed in Shimura's way, and again it leads to some torsion element, and this is computed by the p-adic uniformization, again it leads to some torsion element, and when you try to look at the two things, this is what you get. I think that this is the end of the talk.